Amir Khani is my longtime friend now. I can't remember how many years in co-labor. And I'm Armine, just want to welcome you. And we just want to talk about the things of the Lord, glorify God, and talk about what He's doing. Because I think we hear too much about what the other side is doing in my life and in other people's lives. Tell me, I want to hear your story. You know, life is more interesting than fiction, it's been said, and I think people are the most interesting things. Their stories are more interesting than almost anything. I just think people's journeys and where they've been and their life experiences are very important. And so, can you tell me, Armine, why don't we start at the beginning? Where were you born?
I was born in Iran, Tehran.
In Tehran. And were your parents Christian?
Nominally, yes. We are an Armenian family, but in our family, we didn't practice. I mean, we didn't go to church or read the Bible. It's just once or twice a year we went to the Orthodox church and had the tradition of the service.
Was that Armenian Orthodox or?
Yes, it was Armenian Orthodox.
So at the time you were growing up then in Iran, it was permitted, even though it was a Muslim country, to
Yeah,
church.
that was in the when the Shah was the king of Iran, and it was free to go to have the services and church.
And now it's not so free.
Even now they say that it is free, but they are very restricted. I mean, for Orthodox Church, it is okay to have meetings in Armenian, but not anymore for the Protestant.
For those who have a real
Yeah.
relationship with
So,
Jesus.
and when I was around 16 years old, for the first time I went to a evangelical church, and for the first time I heard the good news about Jesus, and I decided to follow him because he it was the first day that I went. Actually, it was because we had a I had a cousin that committed suicide, and we went to the church to ask if they can do something, that because we learned that if somebody committed suicide, they will go to the hell. So we wanted to go and ask if we can do anything for him, a prayer or something that will save him. But they told us that he is already dead. We cannot do anything for him. But what about you? Do you know if you die, where will you go? And a lady, a Christian lady, there, she prayed for me, and that prayer had very influence on me. I was wondering that how somebody that doesn't know me, how she can pray like that, all blessings for me. And I was very interested on the meeting. I didn't understand anything for the first time, but I was it was like a sense that I knew that the Lord is the presence of the Lord, that I couldn't see, but I could feel that presence. And then we decided to go more and learn more. And gradually I submitted myself to the Jesus, and I asked him to come and forgive my sins and save me. It is like 40 years ago.
The first step, it was an invitation, and for you, You went through a gradual process before you, like you said, submitted your life to Christ, right?
Yes, it was gradually because I didn't understand the spiritual things at first, but gradually it opened. God gave me a big stomach for to read the Bible. And sometimes I was reading from in the morning, early morning until evening.
Really?
And yeah, and I couldn't put it down. And then I read a lot of Christian literature, and that was the way that I my spiritual eyes opened, and I understand what is going on in reality.
Now, how many children did your mother and father have?
We are three.
That's what I thought. I know one of your other sisters. Did you have another sister?
No, I have a brother older than me.
And so how did you meet your husband?
It was when I graduated from school. It was the beginning of the war between Iran and Iraq. So my father sent me out of to Italy, where my sister was living. And then every time I was praying there, God told me that go back to your country. You shouldn't stay here. So I after 4 months I came back, and he told me that I have something for you to do in Iran. And I was wondering why. I am not a preacher. I am not a I didn't know that there is a service that I can do. But I obeyed the Lord and came back to Tehran, and I went to church. We had a bishop in Tehran, Brother Levon, and I told him that when I was praying, God told me, go back, I have something for you to do in Iran. What should I do? And he told me that I know what is that. And he took my hand and took me to the fourth floor, where there was a like a correspondence course that with the Christian literature we would distribute among the people that ask about to know more about Jesus. So he told me that you will receive the letters and you will send the Christian literature and find it. It was like a lessons that they will learn, and they will answer that, and they send it back, and I will correct it and send the second lesson for them. So at the end, they will receive a New Testament as a prize of the graduation. So I started work there, and my husband also was working in the first floor. There was a bookstore, Christian bookstore, and he was working there. We meet actually in the church then also. So it was how we meet each other and fall in love and marry.
Now, why did you leave Iran? What were the circumstances?
Yeah, the circumstances it was not good. I was as a we were I was in university, and because of the revolution and when the war started, they closed the university, so I didn't have anything to do in Iran. And my father just said it's better to go to out of Iran for the girls, especially
To go to
for
Italy
everybody. But it was like very dangerous.
Now, I didn't understand. I'm sorry, Arminé. Did you go to Italy or did you go to Spain from Iran?
No. First, I went to Italy.
First, you
It
went to
was,
Italy. Okay.
yeah. It was
Okay.
after revolution that I went to Italy.
So when the revolution started, did you go back to Italy?
Yes, I went to Italy, and then, but it takes only 4 months, and I came back. And
Correct.
everybody was telling me that, why did you came back? Here is not a place to live anymore. There's nothing to do because the situation was not the same as when the Shah was reigning, and yeah.
So you and your husband left Iran then?
Yeah, it takes like 3 5 years after I came back, maybe more, 6 years after I came back from Italy, when then it was hard to distribute anymore. I mean, they arrest the people that were they were selling or distributing the Bibles and the Christian literature, and we did, yeah, then we decided to leave the country. And at that time, I was married, and I had my first child, who was 1 year old. We went to Spain.
And so you went to Spain?
Yes, we 2 years we were there, and then we came to United States
Now,
married.
did you have family here already?
Yes, at that time that I was in Iran, my father and mother-in-law and my brother were in United States.
Were they in California?
Yes.
Now when you came to the United States, what did you and your husband first do?
We went to Glendale, where my in-laws were living, and we find a church and started to going to working with if I don't know if you know the Lucia Mazar, and we started to minister. I mean, continuing our ministry.
So, Arminia, at that time, when you came over here with the overthrow of the Shah, and then quite a few years later, a lot of Iranians had come to this to the west coast of the United States. Is that right?
Yes.
And so they began to establish communities here. Yes?
Yes.
And they begin to start churches and help each other out to get established in a new place.
Yes, that's correct, especially in Los Angeles area and Southern California, there are lots of Iranian church.
Now, did you continue ministering? Or did you go back and get more training? Or I assume you already went to Bible school because you were correcting
Yeah, in
Bible.
Iran we went to the Bible school, and but not special training in United States, no.
And so you've been here for many years now, is that right?
Yes, it is like 23 years.
23 years, yes, that's a long time. And you had your second child in this country?
Yes, he was born then the first year that we came here.
And then you and your husband have continued in ministry.
Yes, we were like co-workers with another pastor in Southern California, but then after it was like I think 89, no, 98, we came to Northern California. There was a church in Walnut Creek that they asked us to be pastors here.
So you came in 1998. So you've been in Northern California for quite a few years. So I believe I met you at that time through the other
Yeah, so
internship.
it was the first year I think we were here
Here,
each other, yeah.
And so Northern California and Southern California are very different. And
Here also are some, because in Walnut Creek there are lots of Iranians, and here also they have their churches in Bay Area.
Now, not only are there lots of Iranians, there's lots of Afghanis also, aren't there?
Yes, they are.
Which is the same language group, Farsi.
Yes.
And has this given you, how do you view the churches, the other culture churches, your culture churches? I mean, has it been a good opportunity? Has it opened opportunities for you? Or has it, I mean, life always has goods and bads,
Yeah.
but would you overall say it was the best?
Yeah, they have very different culture from the American what American churches have. They love to be in fellowship a lot, to get together, have brunch and dinner together, and there's some of this is a good opportunity to get together and talk about the Lord. But sometimes, but some things are that because Iranian church, I believe, is a young church and doesn't have that deep roots in the. I mean the word of God that the American churches have some of them, and that is one thing that it's missed here, and it's very needed is to teach them the word of God, because sometimes they get together just to be with same language Iranian speaking people like a club, but. What they need is to have that experience in the Word of God and live that. I don't know how I can explain that
No,
better to you.
I think that's very good, because what you've explained is they come together because there's a sense of community, because
Yes.
they've come from another country, and so they identify with
Yeah.
each other with that, rather than identifying more with being the family of God and growing deep in the
Yes,
Lord
that's correct.
and
Yes.
deeper spiritual maturity
Yes.
developing.
Yes.
And that's understandable, because the culture out in the West is very much, fast. I mean, we're just so not, it's hurry here, do this, do that, and it's about what you can get done in time. We don't sit and have
Yes.
long meals
Yes.
and fellowship with one another. We're just too busy,
Yes.
getting our life done, or we're more ambitious and goal orientated generally in the Western American culture, rather than more relational and social. So that, of course, makes much sense, and that's been my observation, is that Middle Eastern culture is more relational. Which is really,
Yes.
when I go to the Middle East, that is the culture of Jesus. It's changed a lot, of course, over the centuries, but still, you sat for a long time at the table, and that was where you had fellowship, was over the meal. That was the centerpiece of the day in your relationships, and it's just not so here in this culture. Tell me, what are some of the challenges that you see for Middle Easterners in the California culture? We touched on the one that they're more social and not so deep into the Word of God. And my observation has been in this time in 2013 that a lot of the very, very deep doctrinally, you know, scripturally sound denominations have moved away from Christ-centered biblical teaching, and that they teach a lot of other things like psychology and self-help, and I mean, like Rick Warren, Chrislam. Well, Christ and Islam have nothing, Jesus Christ and Muhammad have nothing to do with each other. Would you agree with that?
Yes, 100%. It is the God that the Quran introduced is not the same as Jehovah, the Lord that we worship. It is very different. One of the challenges that we see among the Iranian and the Middle Eastern cultures is that what the teaching of Islam is like in their it's what they believe, and it's something like it is, they need to be delivered from that false beliefs that they have. And they bring those beliefs into the because they think that it's the same God, and they bring that into the Christian community, the same things that it's not correct.
So what you're saying is that Jehovah and Jesus Christ, who is God's son, is not the same as Allah. It is a different God.
Yes.
Okay. And this is a there's a lot of blurring of the lines then, that maybe this culture in California is trying to be what we call in missions syncretism. We're trying to all get along, and you know we serve the same God, but we don't. It's,
No, it is not correct to like make one we say that like being together with this it's because it's not the same God, and the God in Islam is not the love, the light. It is they say that you cannot know the God, you know, and beside that, there are some teachings that they have, like that they should be know that, for example, that sometimes it is right to say lies, or in family relationships there are so many differences from what we know in Bible. It is very different in Islam, and the laws in Islam is very different. We cannot make it one and say, let's live together harmonically.
I agree with you, and I think that there are very many naive Christians who think that, you know, love means that we just all get along, and that's not what love teaches.
Yeah, that's right. That's I know lots of I mean Americans who are not you know, I mean they are not I can't they don't know, I can't say they are not educated in Islam, but they don't know what the real Islam is, so
Now,
they
yes,
yeah.
now there you go. They don't know what the real Islam is. So I would say that they have a Islam that they present to the public, and then the Islam that they really live. It's two different things.
Yes, that's correct. They say that Islam is like the religion of peace, but one thing that there is not in Islam is peace, because they say you can kill whoever is not Muslim.
Yes. Yes. And I agree with you. And it's kind of sad that that a lot of Christians are deceived by this. Now, in Muslim countries, in the countries that you've come from, that your family came from, Armenia, is Armenia formerly Kurdish territory? Part of
No,
it?
the Kurds live in Armenia, in Iraq, and in Turkey. It's not a Kurdish
Territory.
territory.
Well, see, and I know that after World War II, the British sort of carved up all the Middle East with arbitrary nations, and not understanding that the cultures of the Middle East are family, relationships, and then tribal. And then they're very clannish. So the Kurds were actually over Turkey, Armenia, and Iraq. And that's probably a lot of the problems that have come up in the Middle East now are partially rooted in that misunderstanding. You know, by dividing up the nations. So now we have boundary problems, territory problems among the different tribes, saying that, well, the Kurds are a tribe. They're a distinct people group with a distinct language, right? And that area, is that the ancient area that borders Syria, Turkey, and Armenia? Is that the ancient land of the Chaldeans, or is it Babylon?
I am not sure about that.
This has come up as an interest to me because in some of the readings, the scriptural readings the last couple of weeks, Jacob goes back to his father's home, Abraham's home, and it was in Ur of the Chaldees, and where it is it sort of right in between the Tigris and the Euphrates. It's in the ancient Babylon, the southwest part. And they had ancient ziggurats there, you know, temples. And this one particular temple is to the god Sin. His name is Sin. It's actually the goddess Nana and the god Sin. And this particular god was the god of the crescent moon. And he actually was the god that Muhammad began to later, centuries later, say this is Allah. And he put together all the gods under one God, Allah, down in Mecca. And it's interesting because that's what God called Abraham out of. And even when Jacob left, Rachel stole some of the household gods. And those were probably the same. So my point is
what I know that Allah was an idol.
And the point is that they've always had, of course, man always has the fallen nature to worship a bunch of gods of his own making, and that was sort of the heart, you know, of that particular. Well, the Middle East is the heart of the, you know, the greatest religions on the earth. They're the most, you know, predominant aside from some of the Far Eastern religions. So it's interesting because these ancient deities have demon powers behind them and they still try to rule. According to Ephesians 6, there's principalities, powers, and spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. And when we understand there's a government that's going on and we're in a cosmic clash with the powers of darkness and those that are the powers of light. And that's my simplified form, but if we understand how it is my view to show people the truth from the lies, then some people want the truth. And that's why I like doing interviews. I love to talk to people because I find them very interesting. But essentially, what we believe is how we conduct our life. And so if we believe in truth, if we believe in love, then we conduct our life in this way. But if we believe that, you know, we are right and we can lie and it doesn't matter and we can kill to do it,
yeah.
We conduct our life in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I oppose this. I resist evil. And that is the right thing to do. So now, what do you think, Armine, about what is going on in that area right now? I mean, all the Syrians, and Syrian is a very ancient church, Armenian. The Armenian Orthodox Church came from who? Was it Thomas, did you tell me?
No, the Armenian Orthodox Church came from the, they say, the light-giving Gregory, who was an Iranian guy that came to Armenia, who was a Christian and came to Armenia, but they didn't believe in him and they put him on jail. But after many years, he prayed for the king of Armenia and he was healed. So at 3rd century, the Armenians publicly declared that this country is Christian.
Now, who brought the gospel first to Armenia?
This the man that I told you, the Gregory.
Gregory.
Life-giving Gregory. Yes.
Okay, so in Damascus, they say Paul in Syria. They say, well, Paul brought the gospel to Damascus. He started the first church. And in the book of Acts, of course, we see that Antioch, which is...
So before that, I don't... yeah, you go ahead and I will tell you that.
Okay, well, Antioch was really one of the biggest churches in the book of Acts. It became the first missionary church, too.
Yes,
other
yes.
countries, and so it's very interesting because there always seems to be so much competition between denominations and rivalries, and there were all kinds of heresies, all kinds of, you know, spirits rose up against Jesus, the very spirits that crucified Jesus rose up against him. So we live in this conflict that prophecies tell us are coming. If we look at them carefully now, they're coming to head, and they're all coming into play, and it's coming back to the Middle East. What do you think of the churches in the Middle East? Do they have a vibrant testimony of Jesus, or do some? I mean, I would imagine some do and some don't.
They are Christian churches. I mean, the true believers in Iran, in Iraq, in Middle East, that they truly believe in the real God and follow Him.
Uh-huh.
But you know, sometimes it is like in Iran, they give permission for the Orthodox Church of Armenia to have the meetings and ceremonies, but they say that we are free to do that, but they don't give permission to the Protestant churches, the evangelical churches. That these are actually, I can tell you that the Orthodox Church in Armenia is in Iran is like a nominal church, and they maybe 10% of them are real believers, but not all of them. But and the government doesn't permit the Protestant churches to have the meetings and the services because they know that the power is in there, and lots of people come to know. I mean, they are very hungry to know Jesus and they want to follow. But it's because of the persecution that is in Iran right now, they are they are limited in the what they can do.
So that would say to me that the Protestant churches are the real believers, because the powers are of darkness, those who are walking in darkness, are threatened by them.
Yes.
Not because they've done anything wrong, but because they really follow after Jesus and they hate Jesus.
Yeah, they just want to have the meetings and worship and evangelize, but they don't allow them.
They don't allow them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it goes on anyway, secretly, I'm sure. Well, so what do you think that kind of climate, does that separate real Christians from not real Christians?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what do you, is the church in Iran really growing now, the true church?
I think yes.
Mm-hmm.
We heard a lot of testimonies that how they become.
Now, is this correct? I remember you telling me, 6 or 8 months ago, that that a lot more Christians are being persecuted and thrown in prison there now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because of.
Because just they have, believe in Jesus, and if they have a Bible, it's forbidden to have Bible.
Oh, forbidden.
Yeah.
And so you can be thrown in prison for having a Bible?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, they can't leave the country, most of
no.
them.
Yeah, I mean, no. If they know, today I was talking with a sister of some a man who had a Bible, and they told, they did, they prohibited him to go out of country. In his passport, they said he cannot go out of country.
Because he had a Bible?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it makes it a very difficult situation for believers then.
Very much, very much.
And so are you, if they know you're a Christian, they probably won't hire you for work either, right?
Not work, not going to school, not going on university.
Mm-hmm.
It is very hard. They don't let them
mm-hmm.
to be in special places of work also.
So it creates a lot of hardship to serve the Lord.
Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm. And if you have now...
Even I heard that they want to rent some place to live. They go and tell the landlord that don't give this place to
rent to them.
Yes.
That makes it very hard. Now, in Armenia, what's the church like there? Is there more freedom?
Yes, they have more freedom, but still the Orthodox Church there is wanted to limit their what they do. I know that in Armenia the church is growing very good in the real believers, but in the other hand we see that the Orthodox Church has telling the government that they are like cult and don't let them to have several meetings everywhere they want. And
now, can you tell me about what it's like in Chechnya?
I don't know about that very much.
Okay, how about Georgia?
Georgia, I know that there are some churches, Armenian-speaking churches, and there are some Kurds, also from Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan, uh-huh.
Azeri, yes.
They're on fire?
they have churches and they have meetings and they're growing.
Now, in Azerbaijan, is there any oppression? I heard there was
No,
some.
I mean the Azeris who live in Georgia.
Oh, they live Azerbaijanis who live in Georgia.
Yes,
Okay.
yes,
How
yes.
about Turkey?
Turkey, what I know that there are lots of Iranians there, and they help each other to live until they can come out of that country to Armenia, to the United States,
So it's a stepping
and
stone to the United States.
yes, and it's very hard for them to live there. But there is an Iranian church that is helping.
So is there, it's hard to live there financially or because of
Yes,
persecution?
no, financially, and if it is a little, it is hard. I mean, persecution is also, yeah.
Now, what about Syria? Since Armenia is sort of on the kitty corner to Syria, isn't it?
Yeah. What on this conference that we were in Armenia, there were some families from Syria that were just left the country because of the situation that they have, and we met a lot of Assyrian families there,
Refugees.
refugees, yes. But Christian people, and they, some of them were in the conference that we were participating.
Oh, yes. Several months ago, when you were in
Yes.
Armenia, there was a conference. So these people, these Syrian refugees, did you have the chance to talk to them about the conditions there or what they saw?
Yes, I was with a roommate with in the women's conference. I was a roommate with a Syrian woman who was also the one of the speakers, and she was in Armenia for 8 months, I believe, with her two daughters, and her husband was in Syria because he is a surgeon and couldn't leave the country because it was very bad situation and all under that war and whatever he was serving the people. They were a Christian family.
What did she speak about at the conference?
She was talking about like teaching about how to manage money in the family.
Oh, very
But
practical.
yeah, but but yeah, but so we met some other families that they were there, and it was very hard for them. I mean. They left the country without anything and just came with a suitcase out.
Well, how was the conference? Were there pastors and leaders there from the surrounding countries? Did they come?
Surrounding countries, no, just we were from United States, but it was from several areas of Armenia. From Iran, from Russia, and what else? Some other places.
And with the women's conference, what is it like being a Christian woman in a Muslim country?
In the Muslim country, it's very hard. They were, for example, we had these ladies coming from Iran, two, three of them were in that conference, and it was very hard. They came out, I mean, they didn't tell the truth that where they are going. And for Christian women in living in a Muslim country, it is very hard. It is if they know that somebody is Christian, they will arrest.
Now, it seems to me in this country, the United States, that many American women are very naive about the requirements of Islam and Sharia law. And American women tend to have freedoms on some levels, and on other levels they don't. So what would you say to American women who think that Islam is just a religion of peace and everything would be great and there would be no problems?
Yeah, I have to just tell them, don't be so much naive. Read and listen to the story, the life story of the women, that what happens to them in Iran. I have a friend, American friend, whose daughter was in love with a Muslim man, and she told he told him that, let's go to Iran and meet my family, and that was the last time he came to they saw his daughter. They went to Iran and didn't let him let her to come back to United States even once to see his parents. It's like a prisoner in Iran.
Yes, I agree. And I don't know, did you ever see that Sally Fields movie, Not Without My Daughter?
Yes, yes, I did. It's happening all the time. They are very, I mean, they are very simple people, this American women, and they are deceived by the Muslim men, that they wanna just take them and don't let them come back here. And when they marry, they after that they understand that what happens to them.
Yeah, they see the reality of the circumstance.
Yeah, yes, the reality.
It's very much women are, half of a person. You know, they're not even really people. They're possessions under Sharia law. And you don't have many rights as a woman. You don't even have the right to exist. Unless your husband permits it, he can kill you. And it's an honor killing, is some of my understandings. That, of course, I've been to around to the Arabs more in Israel and around there. And we often hear of honor killings where a father has killed his daughter because she allegedly was seeing a boy that she did not have permission to. Not that anything went on, she just didn't have her father's permission. That's how much of a prison women are under male dominance. And women in the West, now Europe has, there's a lot of Muslims in Europe, as you well know. But here the women are still, I believe, very naive. And I agree, as you have said, they should, listen to what the women who've been to those cultures and have come out of them have to say, and don't take for granted what some, friend they might meet down at the local mosque in the Central Valley of California will tell them, because they do not represent them accurately.
And what I can say also is that here, American culture, in they like to be equal with everybody else, everybody is equal and you have to respect. I believe on that, but it's not always right and just. It's that you, they teach, like, the children, they let them to have the Quran with them in the schools, but not the Bible. this is not right also.
Well, and I think you're right. In our this culture, we are taught to be equal. Now, it doesn't mean that it's so, though, but we're taught to think that we're supposed to be equal. But it's, people are not equal. You can want to believe that does not make it the truth or the reality. People have different positions and different statuses. They have different giftings and callings. As Americans with an ethic, now not all Americans have ethics. Mm-hmm. You know, we're supposed to, in this culture, treat everyone with equal dignity. But, you know, somebody who has a very low intelligence through inheritance, you know, through heredity, is not like someone who's been really gifted intellectually. They are not the same. They are not equal. But that's a different kind. We're talking about that's what you're just, your giftings and your natural abilities and your position and station in life. But people are not equal. And men and women are not equal in Islam. They are not.
Yes.
And that's a fact. And so I know that I have seen, I mean, there's reputedly from a friend of mine who's an Iranian man, that it is a very big issue now of kidnapping young Iranian women. And the statistics are 50 to 60 a day are kidnapped and then sold on the slave market, sex slaves, to Saudi Arabians.
Yes.
And this is a big issue.
Yes.
And you do not hear about this in the Western press. You do not hear about this in this culture. And these things are important to understand. I really believe that we need to understand these things. We need to understand that the Arabs permit this and indulge themselves in this. And that when you talk to them, you are talking to somebody who is of that character. Now, not all. Every man according to his choices. But 50 or 60 a day is a lot. That's a lot of young women. So these issues are real. These are real, you know, I mean, you and I, Armina, yes?
Yeah, I was just want to tell you that some are kidnapped and some because of the poverty they
sell them.
They go to these markets. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is very sad.
It is very sad. It is very sad, and it's happened in Eastern Europe a lot. And yeah, it's very much a problem. People are not equal. Not in status. A financial status, all these opportunities that we do or don't have. I mean, I would like to fix the world, but I cannot. I can do my little part. You know, God has given you certain gifts to do your part, to try to make people to understand and to have the love of God in their hearts. It's a heart condition that needs to be changed with mankind, and only Jesus. He's the only man who's the Son of God can change a person's heart.
Yes.
And there's no one else that can take out a stony, hard, sin-driven heart and put a heart of flesh, and put the commandments of God in it. No one can do that.
Mm-hmm.
No one but Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he truly is the answer to the world's problems.
Yes.
And he's the answer to everyone's problems. Not that we're going to get them fixed in this lifetime, but we certainly, I tell people, you know, if I introduce them to Jesus, that he does have the answer to your problem. He is the solution. It's up to you to seek him and find it. He'll give it to you. And this is the greatest gift in all our life. And often I say to people, there's only one question you have to answer in your life. There's one really important question, is who is Jesus Christ? That is the most important question of your whole life.
Yes.
And I know you agree with me because you're my friend.
Yes, I do.
Armine, is there anything else? We have about 5 minutes more that you would like to share that's on your heart? Or...
I just like to tell the all Iranian women that they truly believe in God and they pray for that they be aware and do something for the rest of the people in Iran, especially women, that women that they are under this sad situation and in no freedom for them. There is no freedom for them. No, we should be like a lioness and stand for them and protect them.
Yes, I agree. I agree. We must always resist evil. And we must always help whoever we can and not always be thinking about ourselves. That tends to be the culture of California. It's very selfish. Oh, there are some good Christians, and they're very generous. This is true. You know, this in the past, it has been this way, that they are generous. But it's, I think, for me, I was always thought about righteousness, and righteousness means doing the right thing.
Yes.
And that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that we'll be perfect in how we do it, but it means that in our heart that we will stand for others and stand up for them, and we'll say there's a problem here. You know,
yeah.
There's an economic problem. Why is there an economic problem? And although we know God brings, you know, difficult times, and He brings times. I've had times of prosperity, and I've had times of leanness.
Yeah.
But it's a discipline. We learn to discipline and seek the Lord harder for what He's trying to say in our lives. And we are not ruled by our circumstances. We are ruled by God. That's what it means, in my view, to make Jesus Lord.
Yes.
Even if we're thrown in prison.
Mm.
Or even if we suffer for His name's sake. He's still God. It doesn't change who He is, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said.
Yeah.
He's still God, even if we die in the fire. It doesn't change who He is. He's still God. Armine, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And if someone wanted to contact you, is that possible? Should they contact me? Do you have a website or anything? If not, they can just contact me.
It's better to contact you, and if there is something I can.
Okay, all right. So, if anyone would like to contact Armine in the future, you can just email me off the website, and I'll be happy to further the correspondence. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Armine.
You're welcome. No, thank you for giving me time to.
You're welcome.